everyone, and welcome to the August 5th, 2014 meeting of the Tompkins County Legislature. I would remind folks to please silence any cell phones or electronic devices. Remind you that the exits, if there were an emergency, are in the back to my right and in the front to my left. I wondered if you would please stand with me while we pledge allegiance to the flag. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Mr. Burbank?
Here.
Ms. Chalk?
I'm here.
Mr. Dennis?
Here.
Ms. Herrera?
Here.
Ms. Kiefer?
Present.
Mr. Klein?
Here.
Mrs. McBean Claiborne?
Present.
Mr. McKenna?
Here.
Ms. Robertson has asked to be excused. Mr. Robison?
Here.
Mr. Shinagawa?
Here.
Mr. Sigler?
Here.
Mr. Lane?
Here.
At 13 members present.
We have a quorum. I don't think we have an executive session tonight, do we, County Administrator?
No.
County Attorney?
No.
No.
Then we're going to be moving to privilege of the floor for the public. This is the opportunity that the public has to come and speak to us for up to 3 minutes on any topic. We ask that if a person wants to speak, that she or he please sign one of these blue cards in the back and hand it up. Those are the only folks that will be allowed to speak. We have a few rules, and I'll read them. Please note there's a three-minute time limit, and the person speaking says, I agree to a three-minute time limit. I agree not to raise my voice. I agree not to use lewd, obscene, profane, slanderous, or libelous language, or speak or act in a manner that would tend to incite a breach of peace. I agree not to speak about county personnel matters. Personnel matters include comments about the job performance of named county employees or other elected officials. After 3 minutes, I agree to leave the microphone and yield the floor. I agree that if I cause a disruption and am asked to leave, I will leave the chambers. To my left, there's a monitor on the wall which has a countdown clock. At the end of a person's time, there'll be a ring, and we ask the person to conclude on or before the time of that ring. I have one blue card tonight. So far, that's the only one I have. It's for Roger Hopkins. Mr. Hopkins?
Good evening. My name is Roger Hopkins. I live in Atlanta.
Can you see if that's on? Sorry.
We're having trouble hearing the microphone. Mike, can you check it?
Can you hear me now?
Yes, that's better. Thank you.
My name is Roger Hopkins. I live in Lansing. I'm the president of the Cayuga Trails Club and a member of the board of managers of the Finger Lakes Trail Conference. I am speaking as an individual, but I believe that both organizations will agree with me. We support the Tompkins Priority Trail Strategy and are happy that the Finger Lakes Trail is a part of that strategy. And I just want to assure you that we, the Cayuga Trails Club, as well as the Trails Conference, will continue to maintain our section of New York's premier footpath, which is the Finger Lakes Trail, as it passes through Tompkins County. And I thank you for your attention to this plan.
Thank you very much. I guess that's all on public privilege of the floor tonight. Let's move to any municipal officials. Not seeing any in the audience. So let's move to privilege of the floor for legislators. Jim Dennis.
Thank you, Michael. Again, August 19th through the 24th, the Trumansburg Fair lights up again after about, I have no idea, 100 years or so. It's a fun activity in the northern part of the county, northwestern part of the county, and we hope people attend that.
Anyone else? Good heavens. Kathy Lou Serrera.
I think this is National Night Out. Is it National Night Out?
It is.
So anybody that's around that wants to get out on their porch and talk to their neighbors, they should do it tonight especially.
Dan Klein.
There's an excellent article in the Tompkins Weekly this week, if you haven't seen it, front page above the fold, about the town of Danby signing its first conservation easement. And there are, I can let you know, there are two more on the way, maybe with, as soon as 2 weeks from now, all of them for fairly large acreage. And it's just a really exciting program, and I've talked about it here before. I'm going to keep talking about it. I'm going to talk to the towns about it. It's a voluntary program between, in this case, the town of Danby and private landowners to put their land in conservation easement. There are some tax advantages for them, for the landowners, plus they mostly do it because they want to preserve that land. That's been important to them. And it's also really attractive because it's non-political, non-regulatory. All three of the people that are either have done it or are about to do it are lifetime Danby residents and people that are often in conflict with some things that are going on these days. They come from different political parties. It's just a really great system, and I hope that if you're interested at all, that you'll learn more about it. Thanks.
Anyone else? Okay, let's move on. Tonight we have a special topical presentation, and we're glad to have Tom Knipe of our planning department here, and it's concerning priority trail strategy. And while Tom sets up, we're going to suspend for a couple of minutes while we drop the screens.
Yes, a lot of pressure on here.
Is this working?
Okay, nervous. Don't blow it. Yeah. This is all for you.
No pressure.
Moment in the sun.
Future of trails relies on this presentation.
Let's make or break here.
Okay, Tom.
All right, so Mike's told me this is my 15 minutes, but I think I just have 10, so I'll try to make it 10.
Start the clock.
Well, we took a minute to put the screen down.
Thank you very much for your time. I'm here to tell you about the Tompkins Priority Trails Strategy, and I want to take a minute right out of the gate to acknowledge Vicki Armstrong and Davi Mosey, who are here from the Creating Healthy Places Project of the Human Services Coalition, who collaborated with the planning department to develop this report. Why do we put this together? And I think we have a presentation coming on the screen, or is it me? I probably need to do something
just lit up.
Here.
Function F8.
Could we lower the lights a little? We're just seeing if we can lower the lights a bit. Mike in the control room, can you lower the lights a little, please?
Are you the resident?
Well, he's working on that. Let's go ahead.
What's that?
Doing the right thing.
Yeah. That's a good sign.
I like that Christie up there.
Warranty run out on this place.
Plastic bags are gone.
We need to buy the extension.
No.
Thank you for your patience, folks. We'll have it ready in a minute.
Yeah, we tested this. I promise. Well, I think I'm just going to go ahead. I think that'll be okay. So maybe we'll get this, maybe not, but you have hopefully the strategy itself in your red folder. Strategy is recommended for acceptance. Mike's holding it up by the Planning, Energy, Environment, and Quality Committee and the Economic Development Committee. So why did we put this together? Back in the fall of 2011, a group of local folks working on trails, they first got together at the Finger Lakes Trails and Greenways Conference. And at that time, development of most multi-use trails in the county was stalled in some way. The group decided to keep meeting, and they honed in on this paper as a way to advance the development of priority trails, which hold the potential to be linked into a countywide network. So we've worked on behalf of the group to pull together information on all of the trails about who's involved, the current status of development, barriers to development, and key actions. So this paper works to answer this question: what can we do collectively in the next 2 to 5 years to develop our community's potential for multi-use trail and through hiker trail development? It establishes a shared focus on a small number of key actions that are short-term focused, feasible, and critical to achieving the vision of a countywide network. In all, we identified 15 key actions to advance the development of 5 trail corridors and 8 actions to sustain the network. So by focusing on short-term actions, and you could look at the map portion if you'd like during this part of the presentation, several trail segments that are part of the big future vision are identified as areas for future action. So, you know, it's going to be longer than the 5-year time frame of this strategy to really implement the full big vision. But the key actions identified here will move us significantly towards having about 120 miles of continuously connected trail in Tompkins County, with 69 miles of that on the pedestrian-only Finger Lakes Trail and 51 miles on multi-use trails, including the Black Diamond Trail, Cayuga Waterfront Trail, Gateway Trail, South Hill Recreation Way, and the Ithaca-Dryden Trail. So this strategy complements a number of other historic and recent local planning efforts, not the least of which are a number of local municipal plans. It also supports implementation of the Tompkins County Comprehensive Plan, our county tourism strategy, and the Ithaca-Tompkins County Transportation Council's long-range transportation plan. And I've had the privilege to work on this in my role as tourism coordinator for the county to help advance one of the critical actions in our 2020 strategic tourism plan. So what do we stand to gain as a community, you know, if we do this? multi-use trails have real benefits that have been documented in other communities that we are on our way to achieving here. We touch on that a little bit in the paper. You know, they support a variety of shared community goals around tourism and economic development, quality of life, public health, the environment, and transportation. Related to tourism specifically, you know, with the destination quality multi-use trail system that we can develop here, we could attract some of the more of the 100 million Americans who bicycle and the 6 million Americans who cross-country ski. And in real numbers, annual visitor revenues generated in comparable communities hosting similar quality trails is between about $1.2 million and $5 million annually. So in Tompkins County, that would represent about a 3% increase in annual visitor spending. So to the nuts and bolts, what specifically would it take? For the Black Diamond Trail, it means supporting the existing collaborative work to complete the northern section between Cass Park and Tagannock Falls State Park, which we expect we'll be able to celebrate the opening of next year. It also means supporting the city and state parks to identify a funding strategy and project management plan for the section of the Black Diamond Trail connecting Buttermilk Falls State Park to the waterfront trail at Floral Avenue. For the extension of the Ithaca Dryden Trail, it means supporting the town of Dryden and its partners to address concerns of the DEC game farm to allow the trail to be extended to Varna along the former rail bed. The town of Dryden is leading that work. For the extension of the South Hill Recreation Way to Banks Road in Brooktondale, it means developing accommodations for a landowner adjacent to the eastern terminus of the existing recway and supporting discussions by the four towns through which the extension would pass about how the trail would be managed. So within the urban area, completing and linking trail segments will be critical to providing a connected network. So key actions in the urban area include, one, staying committed to the completion of the Cayuga Waterfront Trail, which I think we see the light there, and that's very exciting. We'll be able to celebrate that within the next countable months. Two, supporting the development of the Gateway Trail from Buttermilk Falls State Park up through the Emerson site to connect with the South Hill Recway. And three, identifying and improving on-street and on-sidewalk connections between trails through the city. As Roger mentioned earlier, the pedestrian-only Finger Lakes Trail is a unique county and regional resource which we can collectively continue to support and improve by securing protection and buffers for the trail corridor and developing a major Finger Lakes Trail gateway in Tompkins County to enhance public access. So the strategy also identifies eight key actions to sustain the network. And these are ensuring appropriate funding for maintenance, supporting Friends of Trail groups, pursuing accessibility improvements so that everyone can enjoy the trails, providing for wayfinding and interpretive signage, promoting the trail to residents and visitors alike, establishing a formal role for a trail advisory group, encouraging partners to officially recognize the strategy and developing trail links to attractions near the trail. So many of these, are being pursued, and others will need to be advanced incrementally as funding decisions and opportunities come forward. So what does it mean for you to accept the strategy tonight? First, you're not committing the county to specific future investment by doing so. What you are doing is signaling support for this vision of a connected countywide trail network. You're saying, yes, these are our shared priorities for trail development, and we understand that these are our key short-term actions that needed to be moved on to collectively move towards this big vision. And finally, you're providing encouragement for the variety of efforts being undertaken by municipalities in Tompkins County, state parks, and many other partners to implement these key actions. So I really appreciate your time, and I would be more than happy to answer any questions that you have about the paper.
Tom, that's a really timely report this summer when so many people are out on the trails. The one in Dryden, from Dryden Village to Dryden Lake, the Jim Shug Trail, has been there over 20 years now, continues to be improved and has more people using it. They recently installed a butterfly garden at one of the entrances. So thank you for the report. Questions, comments? Julie Kiefer, then Will Burbank, then Jim Dennis.
These are random questions because I haven't had a chance to read this, but I see reference to crossing improvements at Stone Quarry Road. Could you talk to me about that, please?
Sure. I'm not intimately familiar with the design details of that, but the town of Ithaca has a project underway right now to improve the Gateway Trail from the from Buttermilk Falls State Park, I believe, up until the property line with Emerson. And there are some questions about that particular intersection, safety concerns that would need to be addressed with design treatments to ensure a safe crossing of the Gateway Trail at Stone Quarry Road.
So there isn't a plan yet. Okay, thank you.
Yeah, I believe it's in a planning stage, and the town of Ithaca is the lead on that.
The other question I have when I look at the map in the handout, there are no trails up into Lansing, and I wondered what has happened there. Is the village or the town not participating in this planning effort?
We did have some residents of Lansing as part of the Trails Advisory Group, so it, certainly not because of lack of participation by folks from town of Lansing that this priority trails strategy, this short-term focus, doesn't have a segment within the town of Lansing. We're building on work that's been done by the ITCTC. In 2010, there was a multi-use trails map produced, for example, that describes the full potential for future development of multi-use trails along rail beds in Tompkins County. The section of trail that would best fit with the multi-use trail sort of concept that's sort of primary in this document is currently under use by, you know, the railroad for transporting coal and salt. And so we didn't feel it was timely, given the time frame of this document, to include that. But it is in the ITCTC's more long-range kind of document as an idea, and it may be something that the county wants to think about. There's also rails with trails concept, but we didn't address it in this document.
I'm aware that the train still runs, but there are other trails that seem to be being supported in Lansing, but that's fine. Thank you.
Will?
Thanks, Mike. And thank you, Tom, for a really, really good presentation under difficult circumstances. So I just wanted to make clear, I did hear you say that you're not asking that the county fund any of this at this point. All funding decisions would be done by the developers of the trail, and that this is just accepting the vision. Is that or the strategy?
Yes.
That is correct. Why is it important for us to do that? What use does that serve?
That's a great question, and I think it really goes to the heart of why the group that really commissioned this report, whose names are at the back of the report, this ad hoc Parks and Trails Network, why they wanted to do that report. It's because, you know, on the one hand, we do have significant potential to develop multi-use trails and connect them in the county. But all too often, the decisions about whether those can advance take place in kind of a very narrow context. And so the thought behind this strategy was to, make folks in the community, including, you know, legislators, aware of the potential for this larger connected network so that, you know, a conversation between the supervisor of the town of Dryden and a DEC representative about the importance of that game farm site, not just to the local residents of the town of Dryden, but to the entire county for the broader community benefits related to the larger trail network, could be understood and realized and be part of that and other conversations.
Well, thank you. I am a total believer in the goodness of trails in terms of the richness of our community. And if anybody has any doubt about this, go down to the waterfront trail in Cass Park and just observe the dozens and dozens of people that are using that on any given day, you know, walking, biking, rollerblading. It's just amazing usage. But I've also become aware of the economic development potential. People will come based on the existence of a trail. My wife and I just last week journeyed a couple of hours south because we had read about a 25-mile-long trail in northern Pennsylvania. And, it, you know, we stayed a couple of nights in the hotels and, you know, gave a little help to their economy. I hope we can be marketing as we develop more and make it clear that this is a real system. You can go spend a lot of time on trails if that's what you're wanting to do. So I think this is great. Thank you.
Jim Dennis.
Thank you, Tom, for the presentation. this evening, and I had days like this myself when I was a teacher, and the AV stuff didn't work, the film strip broke, and the record didn't sync with the film strip. So, but yeah, that's really old. It's dating me. But what impressive about all this is, you have nearly 100 people from a wide segment of the community who are involved in this. Planners, electeds, different kinds of people who have knowledge and expertise in a ton of different things. And it's really impressive that you, the planning department, all these people are able to pull us together and bring it to us, I think. It's a shining example of what happens in Tompkins County many, many times. So thank you for that.
And really the folks at Creating Healthy Places deserve the credit for all the convening work, and we just saw an opportunity to support them. So thank you.
Carol Chalk.
Oh, I don't have an awful lot to add. I am really sorry that we don't have a status of endorsing something that we can accept but not endorse, because I would be happy to endorse this. I just want to ask, my question is really for Jim Dennis. Jim, did you have to do this? Give a presentation like that where it didn't work, where the header was "picture it." I am sorry.
I need to tell you about my audiovisual experience.
So I am sorry that we didn't get to see the slides, because I had. This is the third time I've heard it, so it did sink in finally. Actually, the fourth, because Tom sat me down as he was first writing this and designing this, and said, "I want to design a trails strategy, write a trail strategy." I said, "Tom, you can't do this to us. You're going to come to us for millions of dollars to actually build the trails." And he sat me down and made me understand how much of it is the arrangements and the getting people to work together and the figuring out the routes and making the property lines match up with each other. So even though you couldn't picture it here, I'm going to wave my arms around and give you a picture. So I do encourage people to look through here and see the areas that are be connected. I also had a question. Mike Sigler, do you know, will Lansing actually get their state forest?
Oh, it depends on if the company wants to sell the land. So,
okay, but it's make anyway.
I'm still in contact with Andy Zepp about it. But yeah, the land is owned by somebody. So unless they say, "Hey, New York State, do you want to buy this?" then that's where it is. So yeah, Andy Zepp is following up on it and keeps me in the loop on it. So
great, because as we're having to picture it on our own, I'm now picturing. Since we didn't have slides, I'm picturing this trail network and extending maybe the Blue Ways with the Blue Ways network, and being able to get a canoe or a kayak from one side of the lake and make that fourth leg back and forth. Somebody could canoe over and somebody else could kayak back. So anyway, thank you very much for your vision, Tom, and to the various partners who've brought this forward.
Good. Thank you. We have a resolution having to do with accepting this report. Will, I wonder if you might move it to be added to the agenda.
Okay, I will. And this is called Acceptance of the Tompkins Priority Trail Strategy.
It's in your packet. It's Resolution U. Is there a second?
Second, I would
by
move.
Carol. Discussion on adding it. All those in favor?
Aye.
Those opposed? That's unanimous. Okay, Will, why don't we move it up and just go into it. You want to move the resolution for adoption?
I will. Once again, it's the acceptance of the Tompkins Priority Trails Strategy, and I so move.
And Carol seconds again. Discussion. Boy, this group is so easy tonight. Right. Ready to vote. All those in favor?
Aye.
Those opposed? That's unanimous.
Thank you.
Tom, again, thank you very much. Thank you. going to suspend for just a minute while we put the screens up. Okay, Chair's report. I wanted to mention that I met with Assemblywoman Barbara Lifton, Mayor Myrick, Fernando de Aragon from the MPO, also Carl Ford, the regional director of the New York State Department of Transportation out of Syracuse. And we are going to be moving forward setting up a task force to look at the issue of the truck traffic on State Street and other parts of the city of Ithaca to see if there are measures that can be taken to make things better. We were kind of left out, the county was kind of left out of the press release that was in today's paper, but we definitely are going to be part of that task force. So I just wanted to report that. I wanted to report that many of us legislators attended the budget presentation today from Tompkins County Area Transit, TCAT. We got a little better understanding of some of the things that are going on over there. And a couple of procedural things tonight I would just mention. One, we had a presentation tonight, and that was great. And we should have more of those. We're set up in this room to be able to do them, even though once in a while we have a little technical glitch. They are good things for us, and plus they're a way of sending them out over the television signal and also online to people to take a look at these things. If a committee has a presentation it would like to have at the full legislature, please be sure to have the chair inform both Kathy Covert and me, and we'll get it scheduled. Sometimes we get two or three, and we may not be able to do them all at once, but we'll get them. And the other thing is, at our last meeting, there was some question about a roll call vote, and some members of the legislature were a little concerned that whether people should be able to pass during the roll call vote or not. I just wanted to point out to everyone that we do, every meeting, rotate how the roll call vote is taken, even though it remains alphabetically. I was asked last time to hold the announcement of the vote, which is perfectly valid under Robert's rules of order. If that's something that folks would like me to do on a regular basis with roll call votes, to give a moment if someone decides he or she wants to change your vote, I'm glad to do that. I just wanted to mention it. I have... I guess we go next to a report from our county administrator, Joe Mariana.
Thank you, Mike. I just want to let everybody know in advance that if the AV system doesn't work for my budget presentation, there will be no 2015 budget, because I just don't know how to communicate without that. Just a couple of updates. We are well into the budget process. We'll be delivering you the budget, your meeting, I think it's the day after Labor Day, so it's coming early this year in September. I will tell you that the numbers are turning out to be quite close to what we projected in April, so the estimates are holding up pretty well compared to what we thought just a few months ago. Rick is going to report tonight on sales tax. Sales tax is coming in at a pretty good clip right now, better than we had projected earlier in the year. But in saying that, I will also tell you that it's still a very volatile sales tax environment. So as you hear the numbers tonight, I think it's important to keep that in mind as we are as we set up the 2015 budgets. We'll probably coax the sales tax estimates up a bit, but still be fairly cautious because of the volatility that we still see in the sales tax numbers. Pension rates are not yet in. Pension rates are going to be really important to the bottom line of our budget. We're hoping that the state comptroller is going to give us rates pretty soon, within the next week, we hope. We've been pretty aggressive in assuming that the pension rate's going to go down next year. And as we begin to look at the budget, we hope that those estimates hold up as well as some of the others have done that we did back in April. We're finishing up with our departmental reviews right now, so just so you have a peek into where we are in the process, we're beginning to inventory all of the OTRs. We have about 55 or 60 OTRs, none of which are giant, so it's a lot of volume without necessarily any extremely large numbers. But we're inventorying the OTRs. As soon as we get square on the numbers, we will see how much money, if any, we have to be able to fund some of those OTRs, and that will be the basis of developing the recommendations that we make to you in early September. So that's where we are in the process. So if I look a little more tired and act a little more cranky than I usually do, it's because we're at that point in the budget process right now. Also, to update you on the personnel search, we are nearing the finish line on that. By mid-August, we will, I believe, have a selection made, and I will be coming to you for a confirmation.
That's personnel director, right?
Personnel director, yeah. Interviews this Friday and next Friday, and with that, we should come to a conclusion about the recommendation on the next incumbent. Last thing, I just wanted to update you, and I know I have over the last couple of meetings, with respect to supervisory training. We've talked about this a bit, that the county has done supervisory training for the last several years, and we do it through TC3.biz. We've had very good results, and the people that have gone through the training have appreciated it. We've even made it mandatory now for supervisors in the county to take that training. Realizing that we've been experiencing a benefit by this training, but smaller governments don't have the capacity to set up their own supervisory training programs. We partnered with TCOG, and we've set up a TCOG supervisory training program that's essentially what we have been doing, but open to all municipalities within the county under the auspices of TCOG, and again, delivered by TC3.biz. So many of our partners are involved here. The first semester of this will begin in September. We've already cast the net for folks to be involved in that training, and I can report that the response has been really excellent. We've almost filled up the first class, so we're beginning to start talking about a waiting list for next semester. We have 23 enrollees. They're coming from the city, the county, the towns of Ithaca, Ulysses, and Dryden, and the village of Dryden. So we expect some more to come in over the next few days. So in terms of a good, strong response, we're feeling very positive about how the municipalities responded to it. And hopefully, when individuals go through the training, good word of mouth will sustain this over time. So I just wanted to kind of close the loop on where we are with that. And that's my report.
Questions? Thank you, Joe. County Attorney Jonathan Wood.
Only a short report, just as a follow-up to the action we took with regard to the Biggs parcel. The petitioners in that action prepared a notice of discontinuance, which has been filed with the court, so that action is now over. And I have no further report.
Please explain what a discontinuance.
Sure. If you are the petitioner or plaintiff in an action, and you don't wish to continue this action, you prepare what they call a notice of discontinuance. All the parties sign it. You file it with the court, and that discontinues the action. So that's been done.
So it's
ends it.
It's over.
It's over.
Right.
Thank you.
Questions for John? Rick, it's up to you to make the big report tonight. Rick Snyder, our Director of Finance.
We'll keep it short tonight. We'll report on the sales tax first in your packet or agenda. You have the sales tax distribution summary for the end of June. You also have next to it the Tompkins County sales tax receipts, which shows a good number of years worth of sales tax receipts. The sales tax distributions for June for the county were up 9.71% compared to last year. Year-to-date distributions for the county's portion total $16,336,768 compared to $15,757,186 in 2013. This represents an increase of 3.68%. We are currently at 49.8% of budget. So that's pretty close to halfway for being halfway through the fiscal year. On the second page, which is that report that shows sales tax receipts from 1997 right up to 2014, you can see that the sales tax distributions for the second quarter, if we're looking at it quarter compared to second quarter last year, those distributions were up significantly over 2013. The county's portion of sales tax, and this is on the second column all the way down near the bottom of the page, the last entry, the county's portion of sales tax for the second quarter was $8,551,329. And if you compare that to the year just before, that was at $8,026,882, an increase of 6.53% quarter to quarter. It's the best second quarter on record, and it's also the best quarter for any period on record. So it's a very significant quarter for Tompkins County. And then the rest of that report summarizes 18 years of sales tax receipts by category. And as Joe mentioned earlier, this is fairly helpful information to us in the administration to be able to make some very our expectations next year are quite a bit better than what they were a few months ago. So I think it comes at a very helpful time. And then my last report for tonight is on the auction. This is a follow-up to my auction report from July 1st, 2014. We have the final numbers in right now. The auction of 15 tax foreclosed properties held on Monday, June 23rd, 2014, yielded proceeds of $593,350. When you add in the current taxes that were also collected of $49,990, the total revenue collected was $643,340. After paying the auctioneer the back taxes which were owed, the payment that was due to the city, and other expenses, the gain to the county after all expenses was $203,857. This gain was double what we made last year. And that's the end of my report.
Thank you. Questions for Rick?
Don't the people whose property was foreclosed get some money back if you sell it for more than they owed in the taxes? Or am I missing something?
The answer is no.
No.
No, huh? Okay. Doesn't seem fair, but glad it passed.
All right. Rick, that was the best quarter we've ever had increase. I mean, that's something. I think we ought to take a second to think about that. That may not be what we're going to do next quarter, but that's still an impressive thing, particularly considering what we've been through the last 6 years here.
It may not have been the best quarter as a percentage increase. It was the best quarter in total dollars.
Total collected. Dollar increase.
Total dollars collected.
Gotcha. Okay. All right. On that good note, resolutions to be added or withdrawn from the agenda. Jim Dennis, you're going to withdraw the two resolutions.
M&N.
Yes, I will do that. And they are resolutions concerning TC3 and a seeker for Tompkins Cortland Community College and bonds, a bonding resolution about TC3, and I would ask to withdraw those.
And those will be coming back, right?
They will.
Okay. Anything else? Banned or withdrawn? Let's move to the consent agenda. We have one appointment to the Tompkins-Cortland Community College Board of Trustees, Chad O. Coates. Resolutions out of Government Operations Committee. Yes, Jim.
Michael, I don't know if it's appropriate now, but may I make a couple of comments about Mr. Coates? Or
Could you do that on your report?
I will do that.
Unless you expect there to be any controversy here. Okay. Out of Government Operations Committee on the Consent Agenda, we have Resolution A, 4973, deletion of administrative policy 07-18, use of county communication system, and deletion of administrative policy 0738, software. Resolution B, again, if anyone wants these off, just say so. Resolution B, ID 4972, adopting policy 07-01, acceptable use of county information technology resources.
Off, please.
Okay, B's off. C, 4953, authorizing acceptance of a Federal Aviation Administration, FAA, grant for design and bidding services in connection with runway 14-32 rehabilitation, Ithaca-Tompkins Regional Airport. Resolution D, 4950, award of bid, new snowblower, broom, Ithaca-Tompkins Regional Airport. Resolution E, authorizing, this is 4949, authorizing a consultant agreement with CNS Engineers, Inc. for construction, observation, and administration services in connection with the terminal apron expansion de-icing pads project, Ithaca-Tompkins Regional Airport. Resolution F, 4948, award of bids, construction of terminal apron expansion, de-icing pads project, Ithaca-Tompkins Regional Airport. Resolution D, 4945, authorizing a consultant agreement with CNS Engineers, Inc. for design and bidding services in connection with runway 14-32, rehabilitation, Ithaca-Tompkins Regional Airport. Then out of the Facilities and Infrastructure Committee, we have Resolution H, ID 4969, authorizing the filing of an application to New York State for Household Hazardous Waste State Assistance Program and signing of the associated state contract under the appropriate laws of New York State. Resolution I, 4963, authorization to execute a supplemental agreement with Fisher Associates, PELSPC, for additional construction, inspection, and support services, Hanshaw Road Reconstruction Project. Resolution J, 4962, authorization to execute a supplemental agreement with Erdman Anthony Associates for additional construction inspection services upstream Forest Home Bridge or Forest Home Drive Bridge over Fall Creek, Town of Ithaca. Resolution K, ID 4961, authorization to execute a supplemental agreement with Clough Harbor Associates, LLP, for design services covered bridge preservation project, Town of Newfield. I wonder if I could have a motion to approve the consent agenda. Leslie McBean Claiborne, seconded by Nate Shinagawa. All those in favor of approving those?
Aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Unanimous. We'll move into standing committee reports. We start with Leslie McBean Claiborne, who chairs our Workforce Diversity and Inclusion Committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. WDIC met on July 23rd. We had a few things that we talked about that I wanted to point out, that this committee will begin to once again formulate ourselves around civil service and civil service preparation. Perhaps working as a consortium with other municipalities, others who are dealing with the same issues as we are, and the county administrator also even suggested we look into perhaps working with TC3. So that's one thing we are working on. We're continuing to update our diversity recruitment resource guide that we hope others will be using. There are a few things I wanted to also report out real quickly. The and thanks to Deputy County Administrator Paula Younger, who keeps me on my toes. The reading and discussion group are a very, very successful program. We have our fall session, which will begin in October. Registration begins September 12th for that program. And I love the theme for this session, living and working with our diversities. So we certainly encourage, if you remember, there are four sessions, four Thursdays in a row, that these are occurring. I think there are probably two sessions, right, Paula? Two sessions happening. So we are encouraging people to sign up for those. So look for the information coming out. The other thing I wanted to point out real quickly is an announcement, actually, from the Diversity Consortium of Tompkins County, which we are a part. There is a workshop coming up on understanding emotional intelligence brought to you by the Diversity Consortium of Tompkins County in collaboration with the Human Services Coalition. That is occurring on Friday, September 12th, same date as the beginning of registration for our reading and discussion group. From 9 to 4, it will be held at the Tompkins County Public Library. The fee is $110 per person, and we encourage, if you're interested, we encourage people to please contact Paula Younger. Again, understanding emotional intelligence, a broad topic, so that is being offered. The other thing I want to bring you up to speed on where we are next Thursday, we are going to be interviewing several of the vendors who responded to our RFP for the climate survey. We're closing in on getting to that place where we can select a vendor and have this process move on. So on Thursday, we'll be interviewing a number of vendors via Skype, I think it is. So we're not bringing anybody here. They're all going to be on the screen to sort of see what they have to offer. And the committee coming up with a recommendation out of that, I hope. So that's our plan. We continue to meet with departments to talk about or still throughout the year talking about our diversity policy. I think it was a Tuesday. I can't remember what day it was. I was at the highway department. Very nice group of people who are bright-eyed and bushy-tailed at 6 o'clock in the morning. Bless their heart. I try to be as bright-eyed and bushy-tailed with them, too. But then I get to go home and go to sleep, and they get to go to work. So we just continue to let folks know about the policy, allowing our employees an opportunity to ask questions, to know what the expectations are in that policy, who is responsible for what, so that no one is caught by surprise. So just wanted to bring you up to date on those things that are happening from the Workforce Diversity and Inclusion Committee. We're busy.
Thank you, Leslie. Questions for Leslie? Dooley Kiefer.
You mentioned interviewing vendors to institute a climate survey. Is there a budgeted amount for that already, or is that open for negotiation?
It is open right now because the RFPs came back at so many different levels.
But you didn't have a limit.
We did not set a limit for us.
Anyone else? Thank you, Leslin. I do think I want to reorder a little bit because I see we got a couple of staff people that are still here for a couple of resolutions. Nathan, I'd like to go to your committee Nathan Shinagawa chairs government operations.
Yeah, I actually would like to defer this to Dooley Kiefer because I was not at the government operations committee meeting last time. And so Dooley is the vice chair, and I think it would be better if she presided over this portion.
Well, I do not have a chair's report, if that's what you had in mind, but there was a resolution pulled off the agenda. Is that what this is about?
Yes.
Resolution B.
The information technology.
Resolution B, adopting policy 0701, acceptable use of county information technology resources.
Is there a second? Seconded by Dave McKenna. Discussion, Carol Chock.
Yeah, I pulled this because I just had a few questions as I looked through it. This is setting a new policy for information technology.
Greg, could you come up?
Resources, which I think is good that we're doing. I think, it's a new age out there, and I just wanted to clarify some things. One is, on packet pages 16 and 17, we refer to prohibited uses of data. And, E10 seems to require anybody copying, modifying, deleting files, data, accounts, access rights, applications, or system functions without written authorization from the department head and director of ITS. And then in B, there was something about a user who receives an offensive email must not forward, delete, or reply to the message, but report it. And so I'm just wondering if this is really workable, or if we're not making a big enough distinction between your average deleting of a piece of data in the line of work or deleting of a file that you no longer need. I mean, do you really want people to come to you with every one? And then on the second part of that, I was thinking of an offensive email. If all 500 and some odd of our employees get the same appeal from to wire money to Nigeria, do you really want every single one of them to come to you personally before they can delete it?
The answer is no. we've probably looked at this more than 100 times and tried to reword it, but your point is well taken. There's a bit of a conflict between the language in item number 10 and some of the language in the policy. So I would accept that we modify number 10 to be more specific. The intent there is that we don't have people who disrupt the resources of ITS by deleting files that are associated with applications or data that is a little bit more specific to a program.
Yeah, well, I figured that was your intent. Do you have a suggested modification? I'll offer it.
It's hard to come up with something on the spot, but do you have any suggestions, ma'am?
Use a mic. Do we need to send it back to committee?
Number 10 was reworded probably half a dozen times at this point, so I think it may have the meaning may have got deleted here. But basically, I think you don't have the edited version. I have the edited version in front of me, and we originally started out with knowingly modifying files with basically ill intent. And so I think if we could just put something in there that would say, modifying something that you shouldn't be, or deleting something that you shouldn't be. You may have access to files that aren't yours, and deleting somebody else's files or modifying their files. So
we need to clarify between the individual versus the data resource or system. And if we do that, because a lot of people do store on the network individual files in their directories.
So copying, modifying, or deleting files that are not under your own
individual
domain?
Under an individual management or something along those lines would be acceptable. I think it clarifies that statement.
Would you be okay with language like that? Nate?
I'm not sure it clarified it yet.
Yeah. What if you just said, because it seems like it's about applications. I think this is just not written correctly. It just should just say accessing, copying, modifying, or deleting files, data, accounts, access rights for applications or system functions without written authorization from the department head and director of ITS.
Yes.
Because then that's saying, hey, don't mess with system functions, don't mess with applications.
Yes.
Right? That's it. All you got to do.
That was maybe the intent of that statement. Okay,
is that all right, Carol?
That's fine. Yes, that's much clearer.
All right.
Great. Thanks. And the one about the offensive email, I think people will understand what you mean. But
which one was that again under email?
It's B, misuse, the second sentence. Any user who receives an offensive email must not forward, delete, or reply to the message, but instead report it directly to one of the individuals named above, which would be their supervisor, department head, or director of ITS. So do you mean specifically offensive or?
Well, if they find it offensive, it may be spam in a case, and we have to tighten up our spam filter rules. It may be the fact that it came from another employee, then it turns into something that is out of the scope of our intent or our responsibility.
Okay. Well, I mean, I'd let this one ride if you think it's – I think people will understand. And then – yeah? Okay. And then I had a question about on packet page 15, C, number 2. It says that when conducting county-related business via email, officers or employees and other authorized users must use email – systems provided by or approved via written authorization by the county administrator and the director of ITS. Does that mean nobody can ever forward anything to their home email? And what does it mean for us, for example?
For elected officials, what it means is that A, you use the county's email system, or B, you come up with an alternative approach with the approval of the county administrator, which would allow you to use alternative email accounts to conduct county business. We recently had some FOIA requests that included elected officials that were a bit of a problem for us to manage and the IT side of resources, so we wanted to clarify that.
Well, I'm not sure I understand what I'm supposed to do. So, I would love to be able to keep my various email purposes separate, but, boy, I have years of people who have my Cornell email address and my home email address, and they don't keep it straight. So I end up on long chains of emails. So how do you have a way to deal with that?
The only thing that we do is we recommend to employees that if their county account is used for personal reasons, that they should be responsible for notifying the sender to use an alternative account. So if in your world you're receiving county functions correspondences to your personal email accounts, you either have to come up with a resolution that addresses this situation with the county administrator and myself, or you use the county email system exclusively, notify the employee or the person who sent you a personal message to use the county account provided. So those are two choices. Yes?
I don't really understand.
Wait a minute, Peter. Kathy was next.
Oh, sorry.
And then Peter. Yes. All right, Peter, go ahead.
I guess I don't understand what we're supposed to do. I never have used my county email. I only have one email account, and I use that for all of my communications. Am I violating your rules?
I think what we're trying to is the FOIA requests that we're getting. And when there is something that is being discussed over your personal account, basically that's FOIAable, and that's beyond our control to be able to get that data and to respond to the FOIA request. So we've read a lot of other county policies, and the trend is to, if there's county business being done, is to use a county account that gets archived so we're able to produce that information during the event of a FOIA request.
Will?
So I think I understand this, but I want to thank Carol for bringing this to our attention. I think we are all going to need some help figuring out a strategy for how to do that, because it's a mishmash for many of us. And I guess this is a goal. It's not a I mean, it's a policy, but
there is a training element to this, and whether that's at the employee level or at the elected official level, because it does change your world in terms of email use drastically. So we do expect there to be training, and we have tried our best to coordinate with the legislature's office to have new elected officials use county email accounts. So we're trying to, you know, move through those when somebody gets elected into a position. So we know it's hard to disassociate yourself from previous email use and correspondences from email accounts that you've had for years. But it has to be done legally.
For things that are related to the county business, right. Yeah. Thanks.
Okay, we're ready to...
Well, so then when would this go into effect?
Paula?
The way it is now.
It goes into effect as soon as you adopt the policy, basically. It just takes us a few days to get it put up on the system, but this is the request for the final vote and adoption of the policy.
Can we put something in here that puts a date that gives us time to be trained then? Should we do that? Be it further resolved that this will go into effect
is that an amendment?
As of...
I mean, we can certainly add a training date. I mean, we just make the assumption that ITS will work with you as quickly as possible. And I would say that that's true for many of the policies that we might adopt. There's always a, you know, some sort of a transition period. But certainly if there's a date that's agreeable to allow for you to be trained, I don't see any reason why we can't.
Okay. Are you, Carol, are you?
Well, no, I'm not really, because, I mean, literally, by tomorrow, I'll have 20 emails that might be related to something about the county. And
are you going to move an amendment?
So I was suggesting that we put a starting date that we say, be it further resolved, that this go into effect as of how long would be a reasonable amount of time, like two weeks from now, a month from now, whatever.
I mean, I don't. Can I
tomorrow.
Jump in? I mean, it kind of already is in effect.
Yeah.
I mean, all your email should be everything business related is supposed to go through the one. If you were to get FOIA'd tomorrow, you'd have to release like everything.
I understand that. We've been through this. It's just that I can't. I mean, I have tried to get people who had my Cornell address when I left Cornell, but I have people who that's the only address they've ever known. So. And who do contact me on Cornell-related matters, alumni matters, whatever. So it's been impossible to get people to other people. And I'll notice after a string of emails. So, I mean, if I got foiled on something else, I would still need to go through my email. And between now and when this goes into effect now, I tried having a county address, so and I gave it up. Now I need to go and arrange to get another one. So I'm happy to do that. I just, unless Greg's going to hand them out tonight.
Carol, do you want to move an amendment? Otherwise, we have some other folks who would like to speak.
I'm looking around the room for how long people think it will take.
I have Dan Klein, Peter Stein, and Dooley.
So a couple of things. I think that the county business as defined by what an elected official engages in is murkier than county business as defined by what a county employee engages in. And there's not a clear line in my mind. So that was one thing I wanted to say. Another is that some of us live in parts of the county that do not have high-speed internet. You may not be aware of that, but I'm going to keep reminding every time I can. And for me, using my county email address requires me to log in and do some extra steps that are sometimes difficult, sometimes impossible because of lack of high-speed internet at my house. So I just wanted to mention that too. And as far as the FOIL issue, my understanding is that if I'm using my own email address and I get FOIL'd, it is my responsibility to provide that information for the FOIL request. It is not the county's responsibility if I'm using my own email address. So I would be in favor of an exemption for elected officials on that in this part because of the nature of our business.
Are you moving an amendment?
Yes, so moved.
Where and what?
C, well, we're still on packet page 15, that C2 is going to say officers or employees, but not elected officials.
But maybe it's in the definition on page 13, sorry. Yep. In the definition of county officer or employee, it refers to paid or unpaid. Are we the only unpaid officers?
We're paid.
Oh, you're right. We are paid. Okay. But can we do something? Compared to what? Can we do anything with the definition,
yeah,
I guess?
If you're going to make that change, I'd recommend that you change the definition. I just want to tell you that we use the same definitions that came from your ethics policy that was adopted.
Which was?
Dan has made a motion to amend. Is there a second for that motion? Seconded by Carol. Now, I'd like to turn to the county attorney and ask the county attorney, if we do this, do you see any issues with respect to state law, or particularly FOIL, or is it something that maybe we ought to take some more time on and investigate?
There are issues about both FOIL and discovery and lawsuits. The thing about having all communications be on a county system is that when a request is made, it could be a FOIL, but it could also be a discovery request in a lawsuit or something like that that you are required to supply. And it could be back about something which happened 3, 4, or 5 years ago. And if ITS has it on some kind of backup system, it is, you know, if it's gone through the county system and then is within their database, they can reach out and get that. But if it's just me personally, even when I'm working in the county, never mind if I'm home, it's virtually impossible. So it's really important to have some sort of system where these things are collected, because 4 or 5 years later somebody requests it in a lawsuit or something and you want to have it. Now, there are different ways to accomplish that. There's not necessarily one way. But I think, you know, just trying to do it individually, it could work for the last 30 days, but when somebody requests something that they need from 5 years ago in a court case or something, having it on your own system at home is not going to work. So I'm not saying this is the only way to do it, but realistically there needs to be some way where a database is kept where things can be searched and found, which occurred some lengthy period of time before the day it's requested.
I don't think I got an answer to my question. Okay. My question, do you think we would be prohibited if we adopted this amendment anyway?
What I'm saying is there's no strict prohibition. The issue is, what do you do in this place? So that's what I'm saying. So, no, there is no legal prohibition, but the issue is, well, then how do you keep track of it? It doesn't have to be in this way, but there has to be, I think, some way of keeping track of those data and information and emails that legislators are getting.
Okay, we have an amendment on the floor. We'll take comments on the amendment.
Well, could someone repeat the amendment, please?
Kathy?
Packet page 15, C2, excluding elected officials. We're just adding excluding elected officials.
Basically, the amendment would exclude elected officials, apparently because some of the discussion we've had here tonight having to do with the different modes of email that we all deal with. Will? I thought you had your hand up.
I sort of have to, because I was pondering. I'm going to support this amendment, though I'm a little concerned. I don't think the attempt in excluding elected officials is to exclude accountability, but
right.
I think it's an awareness that we haven't fully figured out a mechanism that will work and allow us to do the business we legitimately have to do without, you know, creating a huge level burden. So I think that makes sense for now. I guess I would also, I hear Jonathan say, though, you know, this is not a perfect response. And I think we need some help. And I think we actually essentially need time to figure out something that will work for everybody so that we can archive stuff that needs to be available to the public, but and can separate in a way that we haven't done. So I think we should support that for the time being.
On the amendment, Brian Robison.
Thanks. Throughout this discussion, I'm wondering, and it's usually not popular to say, but it almost sounds like this needs some more thought and may have to go back to committee. Regarding the amendment itself, I've never been one that's in favor of what we are supposed to lead by example. And by excluding ourselves from, even department heads, other employees, I don't think that sends a very good message to those folks. And I really think we ought to think a little bit more about this. Is there a big hurry to adopt this?
Only the fact that we have about six more coming down the pike.
And there's a lot of regulatory stuff in here that should have been adopted a long, long time ago.
Peter Stein.
Okay.
I'm sorry, Dooley Kiefer. Two DKs. Peter Stein is next. It's on the amendment, Peter, now.
Yes, I understand. I'm sympathetic to what Brian says, but I think this is like a huge snowball that I never saw coming and really requires a fair amount of thought. I believe that the legislators are different but not totally excludable from this process. So to do it tonight without having thought it through sounds wrong to me. But by excluding us, I'm not saying that we should not go and figure out exactly what we should be doing in order to satisfy what our reasonable requests. So that's why I'm going to vote for this. But it's not the end of it. After that, I'm assuming we have to figure out what it is we are going to have to do.
I have Dooley next.
Yeah, I'm opposed to this amendment tonight. I think that this question is extremely important. I had to go through the grief of beginning to use a county email address, so I now have more than one email address, but ultimately keeping all the county business on county email is good, and if somebody contacts me on my other addresses, one is Cornell, one is now private, I forward that to the county email. So I'm counting on the county for answering all FOIL requests and any discovery that comes in the future. And I think it's important for all of the legislators to consider the obligation to make it function for the county. That's who we work for. The idea of amending the resolution to say that this will become effective 2 weeks after all legislators have received training is another way to approach it. But I really would oppose strongly this amendment tonight to exclude elected officials. Brian's comment was absolutely right on point. There's one other thing at the very end of this policy. It's on page 17, letter D, acknowledgement, which says we all have to acknowledge that we've read this and understand it and are going to follow it. And there's no mechanism for that acknowledgement either. So that's something else that's missing from the policy. So maybe if we send it back, we could take care of the two things that I see not dealt with right now.
Carol Chalk, on the amendment.
Yeah, I mean, having seconded it, I'm uncomfortable just excluding us. But I do think that we are a special case and there are some things maybe you wouldn't think of. Some question comes up very frequently. A question will come up about the county on my neighborhood listserv, to which I am subscribed under a third email address because I don't want to be on a listserv you know, with the email addresses I usually use. And, you know, and then something, and then there's lots of back and forth of discussion. It's public. It's essentially in the public domain. If I'm foiled on the topic, it will come up on my Gmail search, on my Google search. But, boy, does that mean I have to, if I'm somehow, what do I do with my neighborhood listserv? What do I do when people write to me, you know, using what my, either my personal or my alumni address, you know, and not on the county. I can turn around and write to them, but they'll often, because I'm in their autocorrect or auto address, it often just switches back. So I just, you know, if you could give us some guidance when this, if this comes back, I don't really feel comfortable just excluding us.
On the amendment, Leslin.
So, yes, there's some discomfort here as well. And the first part of what Brian said I'm with, it seems like there's a whole lot of areas that needed some more clarification before this point, and this might be better off back at committee. But my question has to do with compliance. And if this amendment goes through, what does that mean for us when it comes to what we have in terms of our compliance policy? What does that mean? Is there an area of concern?
I guess I'll...
John?
Sure.
I don't know. I'm asking whoever knows anything about it.
Okay. Well, I guess I'll try to answer that. I do want to point out that it says a county email system or other system approved by the county administrator or the and the ITS director. So it doesn't necessarily have to be the county system, and that could be very important, for example, if you don't have high-speed internet, that they can approve some alternative system. Mm-hmm. Again, in terms of compliance, you know, the major things that this is intended to comply with is discovery in lawsuits, mm-hmm, and emails. And again, none of those ever specify that you must have a particular system or anything, right, just that the information needs to be able to be supplied. Mm-hmm. Now, one of the things, I mean, referring to what Carol was just talking about, let's say somebody makes a Freedom of Information request or a request in the course of litigation that concerns a particular subject. You know, and under the system that we have, ITS can search by that subject, you know, Biggs parcel or something like that. And they won't necessarily know, you know, which of us has anything related to that until they do that search. So if it's not, things are not on some, in some way get to the county system, either directly or indirectly, and it could be indirectly, then we wouldn't know what an email you made 3-4 years ago, whether you did something about that or not. We just wouldn't know. And, you know, and of course, Joe is the Freedom of Information officer, and me is the person who generally does litigation. We'll get these requests, and we won't necessarily know, well, you know, and it may be something that happened 2-3 years ago. Oh, well, Leslin did a thing on that. We won't necessarily know that. So it's it has to be in some system whereby they can find things. And like I said, it's not necessarily any particular system, but some way that we can not avoid freedom of information and not avoid lawsuit discovery requests. And I think it's going to have some flexibility, particularly with respect to legislators who do receive, understandably, emails from a lot of the public and deal with things that are, you know, not directly related. But somehow those things that are related to county business do have to get into a system where they can be found. So, again, I think this tries to be somewhat broad in saying another system, you know, any other system approved by the county administrator and ITS. And maybe the instruction has to be that that needs to be pretty broad and account for the unique circumstances of mm-hmm. legislators. But I don't think you could have nothing. I don't think it's a good idea to have nothing.
Thank you.
Here's what I think, for what it's worth. I don't think this group is ready to vote on this tonight. I think it really ought to go back, and I hate to do this to GO because I know how difficult and how time-consuming it is to go through these policies and how much effort it really takes in a committee. I've chaired those committees and I've worked with Paula and everybody else on these policies and Dooley. But I think it needs to go back because this is a pretty important issue for this legislature, and we don't want to sound like we're trying to hide anything. We don't want to have something that's going to make it impossible for us to respond to constituents, and yet we want to be able to comply with what's necessary to make sure that things are available. I can see a couple of ways we could go here if the group agrees with me. If you don't agree with me, we don't have to do that. But if Nathan was willing to withdraw this and bring it back to his committee, I would then ask Dan and Carol if they would withdraw their amendment. Or we could go to the we could vote on the amendment, and then depending on what happens, someone could move to refer it back to committee. I can see either of those procedures happening tonight. And what's your pleasure, folks?
I'd be happy to withdraw it and take it back to committee.
Dan, would you be willing to withdraw your amendment?
Yes.
And Dooley, the second?
Carol.
Yeah. Carol, yes, I'm sorry. I looked at you and said Dooley.
Please do this. I would like to withdraw my second.
All right. Then, Nathan, you're going to withdraw this and bring it back to us. Thank you, and I think the committee is entitled to our appreciation for that. Will.
As it goes back to the committee, because I'm sure this will be coming back relatively soon, I'm wondering if we can try to maybe send Nate or something questions that we have, issues that we've identified tonight. And I'm also, at some point, if we can maybe come up with some very simple sheet that is sort of explains not in a regular, not in a policy level, but just on a very practical. Here's how you comply as a legislator. Here's what you need to do. You know, it's just a basic tutorial because it's not clear to me. And clearly, we are all going to have to, I think, or at least I certainly will have to reform some of my practices. And it's going to be a real job trying to comply, but I certainly understand the need to do so, but the mechanics seem overwhelming at this point. So.
Thank you. Anything else on your report tonight, Nathan or Dooley?
I just wanted to say that if you have any comments, what you should do is probably just send them to Kathy, and then I'll add that to...
Which email should we use?
You should send that to Kathy using your appropriate email address. And then we'll and then whatever's printed out we'll go over. And Paula, you had your hand up.
Well, I did, but you just asked for all of that information to go to Kathy. So the only thing I did want to point out to this legislature is that all of the policies that we put through, whether they are new policies or changes to existing policy, you are included on the impact review request. So this policy has been out there for several weeks now, and looking for your comments and your concerns. And so when we have future policies that come out, I would just ask that you please look to that impact review email, because it is an integral part of this system so that we can allow you to talk with folks like Greg or other folks that are working directly on the policy to answer these kinds of questions. I will offer this. I do have two concerns. Even though you might have questions about this policy, quite frankly, if you're not engaged in a conversation at the point of the GO committee, I'm having a strong concern that you might find yourself back in the same place. So I would say use this opportunity now to either be in touch with me or be in touch with Greg, you know, and let us know what your concerns are. That doesn't mean you don't send everything to Kathy so that you have a central repository for all of the questions and comments. But if you've got some real concerns, please be in touch. The second item I wanted to add here is that it is unfortunate that this might just be coming down to an issue around email, because what you're looking at here as an acceptable use policy is key to industry standards, and it's key to our demonstrating to us as an organization demonstrating compliance with a number of IT-related items. And those things like data classification and safeguarding protected health information and a host of other things are going to be coming down to you where we assume that this policy would stand as the foundation for other things to come. So as you begin to see those policies come to you in the email for impact review, please, please be in touch with me if you have questions, because this is, to coin the phrase, this is a new paradigm. We have to function differently. We have to hold our organization accountable, and this is the first step in moving in that direction. Thanks.
Thank you, Paula. I think that's well said. Greg?
Previously, during the consent agenda, you deleted two policies that leave us with that policy if we move forward. The one that I'm most concerned about is the communications policy. Yes. So that was what was deleted, and I recommend that we re-add that to give us something to hang our hats on over the course of the next month as we review this policy that's proposed for you.
Can I get, Nate, you want to move to
reconsider
that?
Yes, I can move to reconsider Resolution A, deletion of administrative policies 718, use of county communication systems, and deletion of administrative policies 738, software.
Software you can leave.
Software deleted. We can add. All right, so just 718, use of county communications.
Is there a second to reconsider? Carol, all those in favor of reconsidering, please raise your hand.
Aye.
Those opposed? I think you should withdraw it at this point.
Yes.
Thank you, Greg.
All right. Withdraw it.
So we do end up with a policy.
Yeah.
Good point, Greg.
Yes.
Okay. Anything else on this? All right. Staying and helping us with that.
We'll be back shortly.
Do we actually vote on our motion?
Jim Dennis, I want to move to budget next, please. And I know you want to talk about an appointment, and then we've got some resolutions we've got some staff here for.
Okay. We'll do the resolutions first. And then the appointments. The first one, Reso number L, it is ID 4988, ratification of the bargaining agreement between the Corrections Officers Union Local 2062 and Tompkins County.
And seconded by Brian.
And Robinson. I would move that.
Discussion.
Woohoo.
Ready to vote? Those in favor?
Aye.
Those opposed? That's unanimous.
Nice work, Joe. Thank you. Next one, we are moving to O, a bond resolution authorizing the issuance of up to $1,600,000 in serial bonds and notes to the County of Tompkins, New York, to pay a portion of the cost of construction and additions to certain county-owned buildings, and I would move that.
Okay. Seconded by Kathy Luz Herrera. Discussion? Carol.
Yeah, I would just like to ask that in our minutes we add the paragraph from packet page 49, the third sub-bullet point down that says funding will support building and grounds improvements at several county buildings and consist largely of roof replacements, mechanical system replacement and upgrades, life safety alarm system replacements, masonry improvements, and parking lot improvements to make it clear that it's not for specific major
without objection
separate facilities.
Okay. Then are we, any other comments on this resolution? This is a bond resolution. It will take a roll call vote. Remember, it takes 10 votes to pass a bond resolution. Leslin.
Mr. Chair, I do have a comment because these were questions that were brought to me by the public. And in our budget committee meeting, just in asking if any portion of this had to do with the jail. And what I understood from Arell, the county administrator, that only portion of this bond resolution that's related to the jail is for the jail parking lot. is for the public safety building parking lot, not jail parking lot, but a public safety building parking lot, and that was already in the works to be done. So I think it's important to publicly let folks know that.
Jail or jail? Joe or Rick, do you want to confirm that?
That we can confirm that, yes. That's absolutely accurate.
Thank you. All right. Clerk will call the roll.
Mr. Stein?
I'm sorry.
On the bonding resolution.
Resolution O.
Sorry,
I
was, the facility.
Yes or no?
Huh? Fix up some buildings.
Okay. Yes.
Mr. Burbank?
Yes.
Ms. Chalk?
Yes.
Mr. Dennis?
Yes.
Ms. Herrera?
Yes.
Ms. Kiefer?
Yes.
Mr. Klein?
Yes.
Mrs. McBean Claiborne?
Yes.
Mr. McKenna?
Yes.
Mr. Robinson?
Yes.
Mr. Shinagawa?
Yes.
Mr. Sigler?
Yes.
Mr. Lane?
Yes.
13 ayes, 0 noes. Sorry.
Go ahead, Jim. That passes unanimously.
Thank you. Reso P, a bond resolution authorizing the issuance of up to $3,920,000 in serial bonds and notes of the County of Tompkins, New York, to pay a portion of the cost of repairing and or replacing certain existing bridges located within the county, and I would move that.
Seconded by Kathy Luz Herrera. Discussion. Dooley Kiefer.
Yes, I would very much appreciate the courtesy of separating this resolution into the two resolutions that are in your agenda as resolution S and T. The reason I'm asking for that is that I'm your representative on the Metropolitan Planning Organization, and since 2012, the information that we have been getting from both the federal DOT and the state DOT has certainly convinced me that we cannot continue business as usual. And to that, do you want me to go further in my explanation?
Well, at some point, I want you to if you're going to offer a motion or a substitute or whatever you want to do, I want you to do that so we know what we're talking about.
I said I hope you will do me the courtesy of splitting this into two resolutions, which are S and T, and I move to substitute those two for this one.
There's a motion to substitute those two resolutions for this resolution, which is P.
Point of information, can I ask?
Go ahead.
Where would you be putting... There is design work for the replacement of the Marillary Road Bridge is included in this bond resolution. So which one of these two?
I'm asking to split out the Groton City Road Bridge into one resolution, and the other three, including Mallaryville, will be in the...
Including the design? Okay.
Yes.
On the motion to substitute, is there a second?
Well,
seconded by Leslie McBean Claiborne. Discussion.
May I explain why?
Yes.
In order to try to clarify what I have been hearing over the last several years at the MPO, I asked staff to send you all the state DOT position paper called Forward Four, Leading Us Forward to a Sustainable Future. And in that document, they explain that their approach no longer will support building new or taking care of the worst first. Instead, we're supposed to be looking at our roads and bridges as a system and essentially considering triage. If we have something that's used by very few people, we might consider not moving that up but keeping it in shape barely. If we have two bridges that are close together and one can substitute for both of them, maybe that would make sense. If we have sections of road that no longer serve many people, maybe once upon a time it was thought, like Groton City, there would be a city there, but there isn't. we should think about those things and figure out which are the critical pieces of our infrastructure that we have to keep functional. So if you had time to read Forward Four, you would see that the state and the feds are pushing this very hard. And at the MPO meeting most recently, our planning commissioner was there and made a very strong pitch for including language in the transportation plan, the newly revised one, which is not the one that Tom Knipe referred to, that's the present one, but it's the coming one, that it include language that makes it clear that we are looking at our infrastructure in a different way. So I have received this message, and I look at the Groton City Road Bridge, which is not there anymore. It's been replaced by our movable one-lane bridge. But it does not seem to me to meet the test of a critical part of our countywide system. On the other hand, the Mallory Roadville Bridge, which is for design only being bonded, is a good attempt by our highway manager to look at two bridges that are close together, Red Mill and Mallaryville Road, and see if, considering them together, where do we best put our money to have a crossing of that stream. And he wants to involve Dryden, which is where the bridges are located to. So I think our highway manager has done an extremely good job trying to keep everything functioning. He believes it is important for every road and every bridge that we have to keep functioning. I view my position as a legislator as a policy position where I'm supposed to think about this forward-looking policy, and maybe the best thing would be to see if our Facilities and Infrastructure Committee would like to ask Jeff to focus and make recommendations system-wide rather than keeping everything as good as possible. In any event, for tonight, I would like to be able to vote against the Groton City Road Bridge because I do not think it fits the changing reality. But I would like to be able to support the other three projects, and that's why I'm asking to separate them.
Before I call on Brian, but Kathy, I want to point out the net effect of what this would do. Right now we have a resolution which talks about four bridges, and if there are 10 votes for that resolution, the bonding will go forward. Dooley's recommendation is to have two separate resolutions. They will both need 10 votes. If the resolution for the Groton City Bridge does not receive 10 votes, that portion of the bonding would not go forward. So it basically would kill that bridge project. And same with the other three bridges. But I think Dooley is speaking about this one. I just want everyone to understand that what happens procedurally with this 10-vote requirement we have for bond resolutions under state law. Now I'll go to Brian.
I didn't have my hand up.
I'm sorry. I thought you did. Kathy Luz Herrera.
I will. But
thank you, Mr. Chair.
This is on, remember, we're speaking on the motion to substitute.
I'm not supporting the motion to substitute. I could speak for a long time about this. I'll just say that as chair of F&I and as somebody who's paid attention as much as I can, even when not on the Facilities Committee, I'm aware of concerns about rural bridges from my colleague and others in the public dating back to before 2012 and with different rationales. I believe that there's a need for us to examine carefully any venturing into changing policies that would penalize those of our county residents that live in rural areas, particularly those engaged in agriculture that might depend on their livelihood for the transportation on these less traveled roads. And I think that this would set a precedent that I'm really concerned about. So I'd urge everyone to go with the original four resolutions and that the dialogue continue with the I want to say the superintendent of roads, I apologize, Jeff, and with Dooley and others who are concerned, and rightfully so, that we come up with a systematic way of approaching our county infrastructure and particularly roads, with attention to the fact that we have a county that is a strong, vital mix of rural and urban roads. Thank you.
On the motion to substitute, Carol Chock.
I agreed with everything duly said until you got to the sentence about something about keeping things as good as possible. I think that we do need to keep things as good as possible, which I think you meant as well. My concern is that we can't any longer do everything. I wish we could. I spent 20 minutes today trying to get through the few lights on the west side of town, and I was a little bit late this evening because of water rising in my creek behind my house and concerns there. So I would like to be able to keep every single bridge and road in the city and the rest of the county, you know, up to great standards. And actually, I think we need some new bridges in the city. Certainly, the complaints we hear about getting across that west side of town need to be dealt with. So I think we need a bridge policy. I think we're going to see discussions like this until we have one. It is our job to address things at that level. And I wish we had a better way of discussing which of these to proceed with. But in the absence of another suggestion, I'll support this, because there isn't a Groton city in this case, and there was supposed to be. There is a Groton, and there are bridges to it, and roads to it, and we just can't get everybody everywhere at 55 miles an hour any longer. We can't as a society do that, and we have to draw the line somewhere. So I hope that we will do that, keeping in mind both all of, you know, city and rural residents, and doing whatever we can to keep people going as well as possible to as many places as possible.
Again, we're talking on the substitute.
So I'll support the substitute.
Leslie?
Mr. Chair, that's all I wanted to clarify, is what were we talking about at this point?
We have a motion on the floor.
Just a motion to substitute.
Dooley's two resolutions for Resolution P.
Right. Thank you.
Brian?
Thanks. And actually, thankfully, the storm stopped. I don't know if anybody had heard about East Shore Drive on the way down here. But it was an absolute deluge, a really bad storm. Probably not as bad as the one that I left in Groton, which kind of leads me to this resolution. Groton City is not a city. I really don't think in its history it was ever meant to be a city. That's just the way things were named, way back when. It's been the recommendation of our superintendent of highways to rebuild that bridge. That was the recommendation even when, at the first community forum for that bridge, the folks that lived in that area agreed, hey, you know, that's going to be a lot of money, and we'll try it. We'll try it without a bridge. They willfully did that, and you were there, Dooley.
Yes.
When they said that, that they would like that bridge now. They tried it. I would hate to be the person that lives on the other side of that creek when you have a public safety concern. Somebody mentioned agriculture. There's a lot of agriculture in that area. This proposed bridge will facilitate large equipment going back and forth. I was up there today and measured the shortest of the blocks that someone would have to detour around, and it's 3.2 miles, I think, is what I had. When you're out gathering hay for your farm or cutting down corn, and you're making five trips a day across the other side of the creek, which many of them do, to their fields at, 2 gallons a mile, not 2 miles a gallon, on a tractor at four, whatever it is. You get the idea. You can do the math. It is a real community there, and it's not just the people that live within walking distance of that. The center of that is where we've had a couple of meetings, and that's their church, and people are very dedicated to that. That's not only a church, it's a community center. As it stands with no bridge, a school bus has to go down there, turn around, go around that block again, and pick up kids that they can see on the other side. But that seems to be okay. Now I'll give you that bridge is not in pick a place. It's not in the village of Lansing, but it is in Tompkins County. We travel far and wide to find our department heads. This particular department head came all the way from Montreal or Malone or something like that. And we're thankful to have him. We also recently had an addition of another one of our department heads in that side of Groton that's present here today. And, Rick, I don't know if you're familiar or not, but the next closest fire district to your house, believe it or not, is the village of Homer. Why they did that, I don't know. But the fastest way from the village of Homer to your burning house would be over that bridge.
Vote to approve.
Dooley, I did read what you sent out yesterday, and right in one of the first paragraphs is DOT must also consider the concerns of our customers, stakeholders, associated communities, and that's what I would be talking about tonight. Would be that community. I am obviously not going to support separating these out. I think it's somewhat dangerous at times when we as legislators attempt to override the advice of the experts that we bring in. And I think that's what's happening today. You're talking about a coming policy. I'm not aware of any policy. I know that this project has been in the hopper for some time, since it's been being thought about ever since it went out, and we do have a temporary bridge in there, and it's supposed to be temporary. I would not be surprised if that temporary bridge might be commissioned into use somewhere else after that storm we just had a few hours ago. And that's what it should be. It should be in the yard, ready to go for those emergencies. So, I'll give you that particular bridge is in the extreme northeast part of the county. It is, but tell that to the folks that live out there, because I have to.
On the motion to separate, substitute, I've got Peter Stein, then Dooley again, and I've got myself.
I will vote against the motion to separate. I think this is a mistake. I have nothing to say about the Groton Bridge. I have something to say about the procedure. We've been through this a lot on F&I. I've discussed the Groton. I'm sorry.
Nice ringtone.
Groton residential calling you.
I'm sorry, I forgot to turn it off. I've gone through this procedure with five, this discussion with five people, and to go through, I've not seen this happen before. Lots of things come bundled together, and we, in general, I mean, always, as far as I'm concerned, is we accept the decision that's been made by the committee and we vote for it. I think if we have to start coming here with people trying to overrule what was decided by the committee, I think it is just bad for our procedures. I think that before we make this decision, we should hear in committee, we listened to what the head of the highway department had to say about this, and it took a long time. It was a long time with a lot of discussion back and forth. And I think if we're going to overrule the decision that was made by the committee, then we ought to do this thing with the same care that we took when we made that decision in the committee. So I think we ought to go on for a fair amount of doing that if, in fact, we pass this.
Julie?
Yes, I'm sorry that I gave you as much detail as I did. I wanted to explain why I felt strongly about wanting to be able to vote against one project. I was not trying to convince you to vote against it. I hope Peter will turn his phone off. The idea of doing something courteous for fellow legislators to separate resolutions so that things can be voted on separately, that is not a unique request tonight by me. We have done that off and on over many years. And I fully expect that the Groton City Road Bridge separated will pass because you all support it so strongly, and I understand that. I just would like not to have to vote against everything when I actually support three of the four projects. And I was concerned whether or not separation might affect how these bonds would be sold on the market. And I've been pretty well assured that it would have bundling of these bond resolutions will not be affected. The sales will not be affected. That's not something to worry about. So it's just a request for the courtesy to let me vote against this. That's why I'm doing it.
I'd like to speak, and I oppose the motion to substitute tonight because I think that we should vote on all these bridges. This is our procedure to fund our bridges in Tompkins County. We have 100 plus. Probably Jeff could tell me exactly how many. And when I first came on the legislature in the 90s, several of those bridges, I think six or seven, were closed. We brought them back. A bridge lasts for hopefully 50 years. Yes, some of our bridges are, like Groton City, are 100 years old, and we're trying to bring them up to speed. But we can't always be able to just cut back. There are too many issues of public safety and economic need, and I think Brian mentioned those. I think we need to proceed to make sure these bridges are maintained. I'm not convinced that there will not be federal and state money in the future. I pay income taxes every year, as we all do, and some of that money comes back to us. And all we have to do is get a Congress that wants to work together. And usually highway funding is one of the things that they eventually put money out for to grease the skids of their reelection, frankly. And so I'd like to see this stay together. I'd like to see us move on our bridge program, and I won't support it. Any other discussion on this? Will?
Well, I will be supporting Dooley's motion to basically separate. And I really, really hope that we hear her when she says why she brought this forth. It was in no sense a sense of respecting any lack of confidence in our wonderful highway department, but trying to grapple with what I think is a very real reality of diminishing resources. You know, they may in fact rebound at some point, but I think we are going to have to look at that, and I would hope that we can come up with some kind of way of evaluating that we all can live with. So I will be voting for that, but I will also be voting for the whole project, because I certainly support the maintenance of our infrastructure.
Okay. And I wanted to mention, Aduli, you're right. We've often had resolutions out there, and we've separated them.
Yes.
I cannot remember ever having a motion to divide a bond resolution before. And I think that's what makes this different, that and the rules that we have under state law of 10 votes. Carol.
Mike, I'm not sure I understand that last, because we have three separate bond resolutions in here, and we, you know, our staff could have chosen to just put them all together and say, let's just bond them all together, and we separated them for various purposes.
There's a reason why we can't do that.
I actually came in here planning to or thinking about asking to separate all four of them. I agree. I mean, I helped. I was on the committee, and we hired Jeff, and we hired him because he has really high standards, and I'm glad that he does. In other areas of operations, we have policies. We have a highway policy. We have a roads policy. We have a human services policy, or health policies. We have policies in lots of areas. And the problem with this is that in the absence of a bridge policy, we need to decide each of them separately. So that's what I was going to do, and in the interest of time, I decided to go with the flow, with Dooley's suggestion about how to divide this. But if this fails, I think I may try to just say we need to do them each separately, because I don't see any other way to proceed in the absence of a guideline that we've come to as legislators to guide us, and a highway director who's doing just what we hired him to do and doing it well, which is pushing to get everything up to a 10.
Jim Dennison, I'd really like to get to him.
Yeah, Michael, thank you. Joe and or Rick, please talk a little bit about why we don't come here with a big bag of bonding issues and say, oh, here we are, we're going to pass $20 million worth of bonds. There's a process to follow and a reason. Please talk about it.
They're broken up the way they are tonight, because each of these is approached differently for periods of probable usefulness. So the way the bond attorneys look at a facilities project is different than the way they look at a road, which is different than the way they look at a bridge. That's why we have packaged these things, and the facilities plan has multiple projects, multiple bridges. That's why they are packaged as they are in three separate packets this way. So what we've done here with the bridges is to simply present the bridge program for 2014 in a single resolution. So that's what this represents, is the bridge program that's been approved in our capital program. It's been vetted fully in committees, plural, and then packaged as our 2014 bridge program, and they are bundled together in this single resolution. That's why we presented this the way we did.
Okay. On the motion from Dooley Kiefer to substitute resolutions S and T for resolution P, all those in favor,
please. Can I have a roll call vote, please?
Certainly. May we have the roll call vote, please?
Mr. Stein?
No. Peter?
No.
Mr. Burbank?
Yes.
Ms. Chalk?
Yes.
Mr. Dennis?
No.
Ms. Herrera?
No.
Ms. Kiefer?
Yes.
Mr. Klein?
Yes.
Mrs. McBean-Claiborne?
Yes.
Mr. McKenna?
No.
Mr. Robison?
No.
Mr. Shinagawa?
No.
Mr. Sigler?
No.
Mr. Lane?
No. Anyone wish to change his or her vote? Please announce the vote.
5 ayes, 8 noes.
The motion to substitute fails. Now we're back on the original motion, or original resolution. Anyone like to speak to that further? Carol Chalk.
Yeah, so I have questions for Jeff about the bridge. How much did we spend putting in?
Jeff, you want to come up?
The existing truss bridge. Joe mentioned a period of probable use, and as I recall, it was a few years ago when we spent something like $500,000, and that was supposed to could sit there. How long could it sit there and serve the purpose of getting people across that bridge while we see where the funding streams go?
Well, you're talking about the temporary bridge at Groton City Road?
Yes.
Okay.
Thanks.
And how much it cost to put in there?
What we put it in how many years ago, and how much did it cost, and how long could it last?
It was opened, I believe, January of this year. It is called a temporary bridge by its modular design, in that it gives you the ability to tear it down and move it in emergency situations. This was the first purpose that we bought the bridge. We purchased the bridge for $50,000. I believe it costs about another $60,000 roughly to install it, crane rental. Some of that cost will follow. Some of that was repair to some of the pieces of the bridge and some cement abutments and things that will actually be retained as value with the bridge as it's moved. The anticipated life would be an average lifespan of any bridge out there. It's going to carry all the weight as a HS25 loading as any currently designed bridge would carry, and it will last as long as you want to maintain the bridge. It's going to have a 50-year lifespan, if not more. The bridge, the one aspect of this bridge is that the abutment usage, the concrete blocks, abutments that were supporting the bridge, were not designed to be a permanent. They are not of the natural size design spread footing. They're not sitting on piles. There's a threat of scour. There are aspects to the bridge that would classify it as more of a temporary structure. It's supporting the weight, but to sit here and say that those concrete abutments will last for 50 years, I would not say that. There would have to be some further foundation work.
Did we some additional work to put that bridge in, as I recall, to fit it in place. That's the $60,000.
Well, that was what it cost. That was our labor, equipment, man hours. Some of that cost is part of our budget, as we assume, you know, are paying our men. That's the overall cost of the bridge to put it in there.
Okay. Boy, I didn't realize that didn't open until January. So I understood when we did that that you were coming to us and saying this would be a solution for a good few years while we then saw where the funding streams, like the ones Dooley is talking about, were going. And that's what I understood. I was chair of F&I when we did it, and I was really supportive of it. So I guess I understood. One of my concerns here is that we're not getting a long enough useful life then out of having done that work. And I can't support this the way it is now.
All right. Julie, I'm sorry. Leslin?
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. Here's a sidebar question. What's going to happen with the temporary bridge when this goes through?
The temporary bridge would be taken down and stored on site for use in the event that we needed it somewhere else for similar areas like this case with Groton City or a storm event where we have a bridge washed out. We could also save great funds during construction and utilize it in a temporary function while they're tearing out and replacing a new bridge, if there's room for that.
Okay.
So there's many uses that it could be used for.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, thank you very much, Jeff. Doing as much as I wanted to support and respect your right to be able to vote where you wanted to vote. That's why I supported that, to vote no. We often exercise that courtesy to each other. I fully support this resolution. I fully support our bridges. I think it's often we sit as legislators and don't often know what's happening with the people who live within a community. I wouldn't propose to know how the people in Groton feel about having this bridge in place, being able to get around, et cetera. So, Brian, I appreciate hearing from you because that is the area that you represent. So I wouldn't be presumptuous enough to say I will vote no on this regardless of what's going on when we don't have a policy in place. I want to respect that it's here because the community needs it, not just because our highway department wants to spend money, but because our community is in need of this, and so it has my full support. However, my previous vote was to allow Dooley to be able to vote no, if that's what she wanted to do.
Jim Dennis, and then can we vote?
Yes. The only comment I have is when we bought that bridge, it was characterized as a temporary bridge. And I've been here long enough, and all the rest of you have, to know that in Danby and Caroline, in Enfield, places that we represent in the rural areas would have need of something like that. It's always a good idea to have that bridge in our yard, in fact, after a day like today or a day like other days that have gone past. So when it rains, I think it's a great idea that we bought it back then. It's a good idea to put it back in the yard when we get the Groton City Bridge built. So,
all right. On Resolution P, it's a bond resolution authorizing issuance of up to $3,920,000 serial bonds and notes for the County of Tompkins, New York, to pay a portion of the cost of repairing and or replacing certain existing bridges located within the county. Are we ready to vote?
Correction, please. That was not, I think that was millions.
$3,920,000. Did I misspeak? I apologize. All those in favor, please raise your hand. No, I'm sorry, we have a roll call. It's a bond resolution. Pardon me.
Mr. Stein?
Yes.
Mr. Burbank?
Yes.
Ms. Chalk?
No.
Mr. Dennis?
Yes.
Ms. Herrera?
Yes.
Ms. Kiefer?
No.
Mr. Klein?
Yes.
Mrs. McBean Claiborne?
Yes.
Mr. McKenna?
Yes.
Mr. Robinson?
Yes.
Mr. Shinagawa?
Yes.
Mr. Sigler?
Yes.
Mr. Lane?
Yes. Anyone wish to change his or her vote? Please announce the vote.
11 ayes, 2 noes.
Motion passes. Resolution passes. Jim, could you move to...
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Could I just ask that staff summarize why I made the motion I made?
All right.
In the minutes. Thank you.
Jim, you want to move Q?
Yes, I will. This is Resolution Q, a bond resolution authorizing the issuance of up to $3,240,000 in serial bonds and notes of the County of Tompkins, New York, to pay a portion of the cost of certain road and highway system reconstruction and improvements in the county, and I would move that.
Is there a second? Seconded by Dave McKenna. Discussion. Carol?
I would just like once again to ask that on all of these that the paragraphs describing what the bonds were going for from the memo that accompanied it be added into the minutes.
All right. Let's have the roll call.
Mr. Stein?
Yes.
Mr. Burbank?
Yes.
Ms. Chalk?
Yes.
Mr. Dennis?
Yes.
Ms. Herrera?
Yes.
Ms. Kiefer?
Yes.
Mr. Klein?
Yes.
Mrs. McBean Claiborne?
Yes.
Mr. McKenna?
Yes.
Mr. Robinson?
Yes.
Mr. Shinagawa?
Yes.
Mr. Sigler?
Mr. Sigler? We need an aye or a nay on resolution Q, please. On resolution.
Yes.
Yes. I'm sorry.
Mr. Lane?
Yes. Anyone wish to change his or her vote? Vote, please.
Ayes 13, no 0.
Resolution R, please.
Appropriation from contingent fund, terminal pay, Department of Probation, Community Justice. I would move that.
Seconded by Brian. Discussion?
Can we please have 80 minutes of discussion on it?
All those in favor?
Aye.
I'm sorry, it's a short form roll call. Jeff Smith, thank you for being here.
Thank you.
Short form roll call.
Mr. Stein?
Yes.
Mr. Sigler?
Yes.
Anyone wish to be recorded as opposed? That's unanimous. We'll take 10 minutes. Come back at 5 minutes of 8, and we'll finish up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Let's resume. Peter Stein is the chair of Health and Human Services Committee. Oh, I'm sorry, Jim, are you not complete? Yes, you wanted to talk about that.
Yeah, I wanted to make a comment about our appointment to TC3 Board of Trustees. A gentleman, Chad Coates, who is an assistant dean in the College of Arts and Sciences at Cornell University. We had nearly a dozen applications for a 7-year position that pays no money, and there were some outstanding people. We interviewed 4 people, members of the committee, in various times interviewed these people, and we came up with this choice of Mr. Coates. He's a young professional. He has experience in residence life. He has experience in many facets of higher education. And we all agreed that we thought he was an excellent choice for TC3. And we are hoping that he will be, I'm sure he'll be welcomed with open arms. I think it's a great choice, and I really appreciate the work of the committee taking some time to interview these people, and we're very happy and pleased to recommend Mr. Coates to the TC3 Board of Trustees.
Thank you, Jim.
Mm-hmm.
We voted for that on consent, just so you remember that. Anything else, Jim?
No, thank you, Mike, except that Joe did say that he's handing over the budget September 2nd, and our first EBC meeting will be September 10th.
That's expanded budget committee for the folks at home.
Thanks for listening.
Peter.
We have not had a HHS meeting since the last time that I reported, so I have nothing to add. Our next meeting will be a week from now at 3:30.
Thank you, Peter. Questions for Peter? Facilities and Infrastructure, Kathy Luz Herrera, Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Our last meeting was today, where we discussed an award of bid for the Tompkins County Public Safety Building Fire Alarm Upgrade System. And if those of y'all that know a little about fire alarms, the old-fashioned ones, you could put an alarm in a building, and all that the firefighters would know is somewhere in that building there's a fire. Now they've got things that are programmable and addressable, and it's very helpful to the public, and it's very helpful to firefighters fighting fires because you can pinpoint to a greater degree of accuracy where the fire is and sometimes even the intensity. So this was a very important upgrade. This was in the planning, I believe, separate from the jail resolution, and we were unanimous in our adoption of this award of bid. But we had a meeting before that, and that was our last meeting. That was, I got to look at this, July 21st. And have we reported? I don't think I've reported on that yet. I'm just going to briefly tell you because some of the things are on tonight's agenda. One of them was the, well, there's four of them. One of them had to do with the household hazardous waste project that we get state assistance for, and we have to sign a state contract for. Another one is inspection and support services for the Hanshaw Road construction project. Y'all will probably remember that we had federal assistance with the inspection on that, and we were using highway personnel. And you can imagine how busy highway personnel has been this season, so we've had to contract for an additional construction inspector, and this still isn't exceeding the range of the cost in the bid. Also similarly, Erdman Anthony is helping us with additional construction inspection processes, services. Yeah, that's it. That would be the third resolution. And the last one had to do with covered bridge preservation. We discussed these, and a lot of questions were asked. We also had presentation of the county municipal capital projects fund. That's it. Municipal project, no, county capital fund projects. And this was a 78-page agenda, y'all. And the packet was intense. We also had a pretty lengthy discussion of the update on the mental health lobby improvements. I think most everybody here has seen the information on that, the presentation, the slideshow on that, and we've had a chance to talk about that. The only thing that y'all probably haven't heard a lot about are, nope, bond resolution. We've talked about that. Oh, I know. The solid waste has been doing these terrific informational outreach presentations, and they detailed for us between March and probably July something like 10 or 15 different like Boynton, Dryden, a bunch of the different schools and at community centers throughout the area. One of them is a game called Bin It to Win It, you know, ways of getting young people and adults engaged in understanding how important and how actually fun recycling can be. And I think their educational efforts are just tremendous, and I believe they've had some grant money to assist with that. I'm going to stop here for now, except to ask members of the committee that were there to remind me what I'm missing that I didn't report on, and also any questions that you might have that I can send off to Joe or someone else.
Questions for Kathy?
Y'all are nice to a gal
that
just got back from vacation. Thank you very much.
Thanks for that report. Economic Development Committee, Will Burbank is our chair.
Thank you, Mike. The committee has not met since our last meeting, but we will be meeting on having a combined August-September meeting on the 18th at 3:30 next door at the old jail. And in September, we will be doing a tour of the Board Warner facility, which, as I mentioned last time, is our largest private local employer. If anyone is to be interested, all of you are invited. It will be on September 12th from 2 to 4. And you should have gotten a mention or a note from Heather Filiberto. Please respond to her and let her know of your interest. And that concludes my report, unless there are questions.
Questions? Kathy?
I don't have a question. I just wanted to say when our next meeting is. I forgot.
Anything else? Thank you, Will. Old Library, just want to remind folks that we are planning a public input session. Won't be a formal meeting of the committee, but it will be here in chambers. It's going to be on Tuesday, August 12th from 5:30 to 7:30. And we're inviting anyone who wants to come in and talk to us about their thoughts about the old library process, what it should be like, what they'd like to see. We're notifying the neighborhood associations to make sure they know about it and other folks that have expressed interest in the project. So if you want to come, we already have a lot of interest. It may be a long night. Kathy?
And now I'll say that our next meeting of the F&I committee will be August 18th, 10:30, as usual, a.m., right here. And please come. We might even talk about bridges or roads.
Carol?
On the old library committee on that August 12th date, will there be a presentation then?
We haven't talked about that. We're going to be taking comment. We may have some basic ground rules and discussion up front, but it's not going to be a formal meeting of the committee. It's there to take public comment.
Okay. Thank you. Oh, and unrelated to that, did we ever do Resolution R?
I'm sorry, Carol.
Did we do Resolution R? Yes. The terminal place, sorry.
Yes, we did.
Thank you.
That was the one that Kathy was going to give us 80 minutes of discussion, or maybe less. Okay. I forgot which. Okay, let's move on. I think we did GO. Let's go to planning. Carol?
Yeah, we'll meet on Wednesday, August 20th at 12:30 p.m. Among other topics will be what will be the meeting times for the fall, which will still be the third Wednesday, so it'll just be what time of day. So come with your appointment books for that. And then if you have agenda items, if you can try to get them early, it's summertime and people may be getting their last vacations in. So we just want to make sure we fit everything on the agenda.
Questions for Carol? Dave? Okay, thanks, Carol. Charter review, we meet tomorrow at 2:30, and we will take up the part of the charter having to do with the Department of Assessment. We'll be discussing that. Any questions? Public Safety Committee, Brian Robison.
Thanks, Mike. The Public Safety Committee will meet next Monday, the 11th, at 3:30 in this room. Probably the highlight will be the much-anticipated presentation and recommendations from the ATI Task Force. I believe we are also going to have an abbreviated presentation of that at our next legislative meeting on the 19th. Is that correct?
Yeah, we'll talk to Mike to make sure we can get time on that agenda, but that's the tentative plan.
Okay.
Yes. Duly noted.
Okay.
Any questions for Brian? People want to go home tonight. Minutes of the previous meeting, July 15th, 2014. Someone want to move those?
Move.
Moved by Leslin. Is there a second? Seconded by Brian. Discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Those opposed? One opposed. Any unfinished business? Dave McKenna.
Yeah, I'd just like to report that the Thompson County Broadband Committee did meet on the 29th of July to discuss net neutrality. We are in the process of drafting a resolution to support a version of net neutrality that we feel is appropriate for Tompkins County in this area. And we will bring it to GO at their next meeting and hopefully the legislature at the next meeting after that.
That's awesome.
Dave, I know that's a complicated issue, but for the folks at home, can you just give us a short definition of net neutrality?
Basically, it's... My personal opinion of it is that it is equality for all kinds of input to the net. Okay.
It's for the users, so everyone gets the same.
You get the same, pretty much the same service, and try to not or discourage heavy users from getting preferential treatment.
And this is a national issue, is that right?
That's correct.
Thank you for that, telling us about that. Will?
Another issue?
Go ahead. Unfinished business.
Thank you. I just wanted to take note that and thank Harrell and Joe and whatever for putting the shades or the blinds, rather, on that side of the room. So I've had the experience in previous times of sitting here at meetings and essentially not being able to see the people on the opposite road. So that helps. And I see we no longer have plastic bags in the corner. Is that indicative of a fixed roof or something like that? So thank you for keeping us dry and safe.
Thanks. Anything else tonight? I'll take a motion to adjourn. Jim Dennis, is there a second? Seconded by Leslin. All in favor of adjourning?
Aye.
That's unanimous. Thank you all.
Thank you,
Kathy. Thank you, Michelle.